Hey everyone, this is John.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is the Super Nintendo Show edition of our podcast, which means we're just going to talk about Super Nintendo games. We kind of do this in semi-chronological order, kind of loosely based on when they were coming out. So up this week, we have Battletoads and Double Dragon on tap, as well as Rock'n Roll Racing. And you want to talk a little bit about the Power Rangers game?
I did, in fact.
Which we may have talked about a little bit in the past, but we really haven't gone in deep.
I think briefly it came up because we did a talk about brawlers or beat-em-ups.
Yes. That was probably when it happened.
Yeah.
But I wanted to jump in first with Battletoads and Double Dragon, because it's a game we have both played.
Yeah.
We have both suffered through.
Regrettably.
Yep. It is a side-scrolling beat-em-up starring the two guys from Double Dragon and the three toads from Battletoad. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of pitched as the ultimate tag team matchup for side-scrolling beat-em-up games. It is developed by Rare. Well, Rare is credited as one of the developers. I'll
their
phrase it
name
like that.
Is on it, and I'm sure that if looking back, they regret that happened.
Right, because Rare also did like the original
Konami logo up there if they could. Blame it on somebody else.
But this is, it's not a good game. It is published by Trade West. Might as well throw that out there as well. This one is kind of a strange release date because it was released on the NES in June of 1993, which would mean 21 years ago this month, but not on the Super Nintendo until December 1993. So this is a cross-platform game, and you can kind of tell because they didn't do a whole hell of a lot to next-genify it.
Yeah.
It's a pretty rudimentary-looking game. You know, the one thing that pops up every time we talk about a new side-scrolling brawler, because we talked about this when we talked about Double Dragon as well, is these games are coming out two and a half years after Final Fight. They don't look or play as well as Final Fight.
That's really sad. It's really sad to think about that. And maybe it's just a mile marker for how strong Capcom was as a gaming company for the games that they were making. But also, it's not even that the game is that complex. It's just, it looks good. It simply looks good.
Yeah.
And that's something that this game could have done just as easily, but it doesn't. All of the characters look like they're old versions that you've played either from arcade or just like what Nintendo. Like, they didn't do anything to spruce this up.
Yeah. And, you know, Final Fight did have an advantage of already have been developed. It was an arcade game before they ported it to the Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. But it's not like they go into their options menu and just change it to, like, okay, now it's a Super Nintendo game. It takes some work to actually port it over. And it just...
Also, when you think about it, the actual fighting mechanics of Final Fight is more complex than this. You have different attacks you can do. Combos, throws. There's a difference between doing an up attack and a down attack. They give you... Battletoads versus Double Dragon does give you kind of a weapon.
But
there's no complexity to it.
Yeah, all of the attacks that you're doing are conditional. They're context sensitive. So if you're at a certain stage, you know, you're going to be like beating guys' heads into the ground. And if you have a stick, you know, if you're a toad, you're gonna like flip them up into the air and swing at them like it's a bat. And if you're one of the Double Dragon characters, you're gonna use that stick as kind of like a pogo and bounce on top of their heads with it. Which, you know, one positive thing you could say about the game is that there's some pretty funny animations to it.
Yeah.
Some mildly amusing stuff.
There are some cute animations.
Like when you grab one of the blonde bimbos by the hair repeatedly kicking her in the ass.
Well, there's a series of punches to the baby maker that happens first. And then you get a hold of her hair. And then you were flailing her by the hair.
Yep.
Before you just kick her in the ass off the stage.
Yeah, and it's pretty appalling at first. But when you accept to fight those characters, they deserve every bit of it.
And there's so many of them, too, that like it's just a horde of these... They might as well not be like real people.
Right. Well, because they're not. They're lines of code.
Yeah.
Poorly written lines of code, maybe.
I didn't mean it in that context. By the way, to clarify, from all of the other podcasts we've done about gaming, I didn't think that any of them were reality.
You mean when you see turtles in the road, you don't try to jump on them?
Well, that's for entirely different reasons.
Okay. So, we might as well get into some of the specifics about the combat mechanics of this game. You have a jump button. You have an attack button. There is kind of a jump attack, but by far the most useful and powerful technique is your dash attack. So you can dash forward
just
and then
charge forward. Yeah, you dash forward and then just press the attack button.
Yeah, the two bosses that we had encountered... We dispatched them fairly easily with just using that technique.
Yeah, and it wasn't that we doubled up on him either. I think it, like, you could pretty much just sit there on top of, and on, yeah, like inside of the sprite doing the attack over and over again.
Yeah.
With zero repercussion.
Yeah, because it affords you like a knockback. And that's one of the things that bothers me about the game is that there's a lot of knockback going on, but it's two extremes. Either you're getting knocked back and losing a lot of health, like when one of the blonde girls hits you with her whip.
That's the thing. When they get going, they're very difficult to bring down.
Yep. Harder than some of the bosses, even.
Yeah.
They just take fewer hits. And the other extreme is that if you are cornered by a couple of enemies, they can just wail on you. Because their regular jabs don't give you any knockback and doesn't give you any time to react either.
Well, and you have, is it 10 little tokens that represent your life?
Five.
Five?
No, six. Six of them, yeah.
Well, then in some of them, they'll hit you and it'll take away two.
Yeah.
The game is actually kind of unforgiving when it comes to damage in some ways.
Yeah, it really is. And some of the like stage hazards are pretty unforgiving as well,
yep,
because there are hazards right next to a pit. When you get hit by a hazard, there's knockback, and you fall right back into a pit.
Yeah.
And, God, one of the most frustrating things about this game is the way they have their continue set up. Like, in any other normal, rationally planned out game, when one character game overs and the other one still has lives, the one that's still alive is able to keep on going in the game until a logical checkpoint or until they die, and then you use a continue.
Mm-hmm.
In Battletoads and Double Dragon, when one player dies,
you're both gone, right?
Well, you're not both gone, but the player that dies gets to use a continue right away, and that will knock you back to your last checkpoint. So, if, for example, I had three lives, you had one,
mm-hmm,
You died, and then we got sent back to the checkpoint, I would still have the lives I had, and then you would be fully replenished. So it's basically punishing the other player for, like, hey, you know, this other guy's dragging you down. You got to keep on doing that same thing over and over again. And there are some things where the I guess most efficient way to get through it is just to let yourself take damage,
mm-hmm,
and just keep on trying to press on after that. Like the part where you have to rappel off the walls and there are blades coming at you. There doesn't seem to be a really efficient way to take care of that.
Well, and the thing is like if you look at, say, the standard bearer like Mario as far as a side-scroller would go, there's a lot of areas in Mario where it's clearly designed where you should dash. And if you were a smart player, you could dash and then hit something that makes this level so much easier than if you were to try to do it piecemeal. Make every single jump, get over every single chasm. But in this, it's sort of like, they don't, you could do it, only to haphazardly run into death.
Right.
There's no logic behind the way these levels are developed.
Right. A lot of it does seem to be, like, maybe they created like a really crude level editor and just started throwing hazards in certain places. There's not really, like you said, not really well thought out.
And they also don't, and I've been playing a lot of Donkey Kong Country lately, and the puzzles in Donkey Kong are really fantastic because they will quickly educate you on some little element, and then they will increase it mildly in its complexity, only to give you a breather, and then you do it again and again. And you do it four times, each one getting just a little bit harder until you've really done something that is pretty difficult by the end of the stage. Whereas in this, it's like they don't even revisit some of these things. Or if they do, it's the exact same thing that you just did.
Yep. So, you know, despite the simplicity or the crudity of the level design, there are a couple of things that are pretty interesting. The guy who throws dynamite at you, it doesn't always work the way it should, but it's a pretty neat idea to have to pick up that stuff and throw it back at him. Also, like how you can climb cages to reach certain power-ups in different areas, health restores and points and things like that. That's pretty cool. The problem is when they use those sort of cage areas that you have to climb on later on, it doesn't always work. Like sometimes you have to backtrack and readjust where your character is in order to move back forward and actually proceed through certain areas. It's very easy to get stuck on these things.
Mm-hmm.
So there's cool ideas there. It's just really poorly executed.
Yeah.
I think the part that actually worked the best was on the little speeder bike.
Yeah, actually that's probably the most fun you can have playing the game.
Yeah.
And it's not glitchy for any reason, or it's not like doesn't show the seams the way the rest of these levels do.
Yeah, and it runs very smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
So there are seven stages in this game. There's bosses and a couple of
mini bosses. We were playing earlier. Where were we on at that point?
We were on three.
No,
Okay. And I have a feeling we're real close to the boss in 3. But yeah, those stage hazards. Just
a pain in the ass. And it's not rewarding in any way to die like that.
Right.
You know, there's a way that you can lose and learn. And in this one, it's just, you hate the design.
Yep. So anything else you want to say about Battletoads and Drawable Dragon before we move on?
How simplistic the sprites are, there's colors being used, but in sort of a Jackson Pollock splatter of colors where none of it has any, it doesn't look good. All of the backgrounds don't really show that much design and detail. And really all you're seeing is just different shades of brown and I guess gray that get mixed together. And then most of the designs seem like they're kind of industrial.
Yeah.
Just doesn't look good.
And those hand-like obstacles in the first stage, they use, like, the arm of it is made up of, like, a series of balls, like a pen at a bank.
Yeah.
And when they die, all of them get spewed out at you. Like, you get this, like, shower of colors, and it just feels real out of place. And then, you know, not to mention that they make you fight it, like, back-to-back. Like, hey, you just fought this hand thing. Fight it again before I fight the boss.
Which... Yeah, with no increase in difficulty, it's like they just copy-pasted this chunk of the stage over again for you to do it.
Right, and that's probably exactly what it was. They needed that stage to be just a little bit longer, so do that again.
Also, maybe, I think, another complaint I would have about the game, tighter focus would maybe improve it graphically and give you a better sense of the levels, because the levels are very, very big and open, and you're such a tiny little thing on the stage, and all your opponents are tiny little things. Like... I think it would maybe look a little bit better if you were like in Final Fight, you're giant.
Yeah.
You're like a monster right in the middle of the stage, and you could just see all this beautiful detail every time you do a combo. But with them, it's like these short, fast little animations. You just see a few pixels move around, and that's supposed to be your combo.
Yeah.
So I mean, about the closest thing you get to see to anything that's really well designed is when they do the goofy animations, or like when the Battletoads make a face that's the size of their entire body.
Right.
You actually get to see a little bit of detail. But beyond that, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, it's probably the most personality the game shows is when they have those silly Battletoad animations. All right, so why don't we move on? Why don't we talk about some Power Rangers for a little bit, since that's also a side-scrolling brawler game.
Yeah, and last we spoke of this, I think I spoke very highly of it, and I would still continue to say that. I think the worst thing you can say about it is that you're playing a Power Rangers game. But beyond that, it's really a fun, dynamic side-scroller that towards the end completely changes. I think, and especially considering that this is a Bandai property, right? This is one of the few like conversions of a series or a film, like some other property, into a game that worked out so well. Like, I've played so many shitty takes on either like, you know, big celebrity athlete games or something like Home Alone 2 is like notoriously maybe the worst game I've ever played for a Super Nintendo. It's a really, really bad game. And it makes you in no way feel like you, if you've seen Home Alone 2 Lost in New York, you would never see any way in which these two games would have any commonality. But within, and I really know nothing about the Power Rangers series, but they did such a fantastic job of giving you 5 unique players that you can pick from. And the way that the stages work out is that, again, it's a side-scroller, and I believe you really just have your attack button, your jump button, and your bomb. Mm-hmm. You get a bomb. And what is cool about it is they all have combos. There are different, holding buttons different directions causes different kinds of attacks. So it does increase, it makes it a little more dynamic when you're playing it. And you are huge on the screen. You are kind of like Final Fight, where, also, there's no third dimension to it.
Yeah,
you're pretty much just on a line, like there's platforms and stuff you can jump on. But in playing this, it reminded me of just how good a game like Double Dragon, or how good a game like Power Rangers was in a weird way. Also, really, really good looking animation, too. Like, mm-hmm. It just had a great color palette. All of the 5 are represented by different colors, but it's not just that, the background designs look good. So, and as you play it, yeah, you start off as like their teenage kid version, and then about halfway through each stage, you hit your power up and you transform into the Power Ranger. And then you continue your fight from then on.
And then you also get equipped with a weapon, right?
Yeah, you get a badass weapon. Like say for example, you have the blonde, or the, not she's not blonde, but the pink girl.
Mm-hmm.
She gets a bow and arrow. So you can either attack people like with her bow as though it were like some kind of sword or something, but then she also has the super weak. If you hold up an attack, she'll just pull back and launch an arrow.
Nice.
Yeah, so all of the weapons have this different dynamic play that you can do. So it gives you a fun way to bring them all down. And then you actually get to really fun bosses that all operate differently and have different strategies about them, kind of like you would in Contra. Like, there's a certain strategy for it. The first time you play through it, you might just get mopped up because you haven't figured out exactly what this thing is going to do or how it's going to behave. Yeah, it's a really fun game. And then the cool thing that they do at the end of it is, rather than, like, giving you some big boss battle, you play through in this mode, and then they just throw you into this badass player versus player fighter. Where you're actually in the big suits that they get to have, the big...
The animal robots.
And that part of the game is a blast, because not only do you get more dynamic fighting from this, you get up and down attacks and crouches, charges, things like that, but you also get a really nifty power bar. And the point at which you use the power bar gives you a different attack. The only problem is you basically just get the big thing that they all are when they merge together or whatever.
Yeah.
Did they merge together?
Yeah.
It's like... And then you just go through a series of, like, big badass boss opponents. Then this, apparently they realized just how great a game this was, how much fun doing this portion of the game was. By the way, they give you codes. So if you don't want to play through all of the normal games just to get to the fun fights, you can just remember what the codes are and then just punch them in real quick and you're there. But they realized how great this was, and they made a sort of a sequel where all you're doing is playing this fighter, where you're doing the one versus one in the big suits. And they also introduce multiplayer, which is the other big thing this thing is like. Honestly, those are the two big problems. There's no multiplayer in this game. You can't play with a friend. And two, it's a Power Rangers game.
Yeah, it seems like the fact that it's a Power Rangers game is probably pretty inconsequential. It's just it's just giving the game a property to use.
Yeah. Have you ever played this game, by the way?
I've played a little bit. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I played it on an emulator. And playing things on an emulator never just... feels right. You always have to remap things on the keyboard, because using a directional pad or the arrow keys on a keyboard to mimic a directional pad feels wrong. You're using your right hand, which is the opposite way we've been trained for 25 years.
It would be great if you had your thumb as the QWERTY and you're just like rubbing it around the keypad, like trying to move.
Yeah, that would be terrible. So. Yeah, I've played this game a little bit, haven't been exposed to it too much. And, you know, the fact that it doesn't have multiplayer is kind of a downer.
The other thing, though, is at no point in this game, the only thing that it would be fun to have multiplayer for is to play your friend and when you're doing the fights at the end. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, there's no place for two characters to have on these side-scroller levels that you have to go through. It would just be, for one, you would be, you are such a big part of the screen anyways. You would have to find a way to like pan and scan, sort of, to keep both people on the same screen. And you also do so much on your own, it would just be overkill. Like, they would either have to flood you with so many minions that it would stop being the kind of fun game it is, or they would just basically let you mop up nothing.
Yeah, especially since you're just moving across the one axis, just back and forth, there's no other depth to the level. Having a second player might be a little bit cluttering to the field, but...
Can I crack this one open?
Oh, please do.
Another podcast use.
But, you know, and it's the only complaint I have about Final Fight as well, is that, you know, these, like, side-scrolling brawler games are so suited to co-op that...
Yeah.
It seems a shame that when it's not in one, but, you know, Final Fight manages to overcome just based on, like, the pure simplicity and... God, what's the adjective I'm looking for? How intuitive the controls are. Mm-hmm. Just being able to very fluidly move throughout the game. And it never feels extremely unfair. Except, you know, when you have to fight both Andors in the ring. That's fucking unfair.
Yeah. Well, maybe this is also a thing of expectations. Like, this should be... What did they bill it as? A crossover of the two greatest series.
Yeah, the ultimate tag team matchup.
This is the ultimate. You just played the ultimate tag team matchup. How do you feel? That was what they just told you. Is that the ultimate tag team matchup?
You know, when I saw that as the tagline for the
it's
game,
it's failed potential. It's really failed potential.
Yeah, but as long as we jump back into Battletoads, like, I've played Battletoads on the NES, and I know it's, like, a really well-regarded game. I was not impressed.
No.
And I've played Double Dragon. We actually just talked about Super Double Dragon not only a few months ago, And I was not impressed by that game either. So I don't know what I was expecting out of like a mashup of the two, mm-hmm. but it turned out to be a pretty big mess.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate because I paid $30 for that cartridge.
Yeah.
And the other option...
Wait, you seriously paid $30 for that?
$30. Card? Well, you know, I had some like Amazon points built up, so I got a pretty heavy discount. But I burned Amazon points.
Yeah. So in other words, Amazon is making really good money with their points.
Right. So the other game that I could have spent $30 on is Rock and Roll Racing. And this one would have definitely been the better choice, but I'd never heard of this game or the developer before, so I kind of stayed away from it. And I saw Battletoads, and I was like, oh, well, Rare's involved. It's got to be pretty decent. However, just as a quick description of the game to start off with, Rock and Roll Racing is kind of a battle racing game with a bunch of like customizable cars. It is developed by Silicon and Synapse, who I had not heard of. Have you heard of them?
I don't believe so.
Rightly so, because in 1994, it was founded in 1991, and in 1994, they changed their name to Blizzard.
Are you kidding me?
Nope.
That's insane.
It was a really early game for them. Of course, released in June of 1993, 21 years ago.
That's awesome.
But is really, really technically competent, mm-hmm. especially compared to some of the other garbage that we've been talking about recently.
Well, it makes sense now because so many of Blizzard games are all about that isometric view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it uses that isometric view, and it kind of gives the illusion of polygons, and it looks really nice. The one challenge it does bring, though, is that it's not following like your car directly, as like F-Zero, for example. So if a right turn is coming up, then you're always going to want to press right on the directional pad. And since it's going around in a loop, sometimes your car might be moving left, but it's actually a right turn. So you always kind of have to keep your mind on the track and what direction you're moving on it.
Oh, there's like the visual conflict of trying to figure out how to navigate turns.
Exactly. So the positive thing about that is it starts you off in really simplistic tracks. Like the first track is just a circle, just an oval with four turns on it. So... Mm-hmm.
Like Death Valley.
Yeah. Like every Deathwind, every NASCAR race.
Oh, yeah.
That's what the first track is. And the tracks don't really get super complicated, which is unfortunate, but it works for the game because the game is more than just get into first and stay in first. There are ways to work your way around these other cars. Like there's combat in the game. You have a shot of laser, and you have like an explosive device. It's a bomb or a mine. I can't remember offhand which one it is right now, but you only get one of them in a race. And in between races, you're able to upgrade and add things to your car. Like you can add more shots to it, and you do this because there's also an economy to the game. Depending on where you're placing these races, you're getting a cash prize, and you can use that cash prize to buy a different car. Or you can buy upgrades to the current car you have to upgrade its like its speed and acceleration and things like that. And then you can also buy wheels and then more weapons that you can use for your car. And then you use them exactly like how you think you would. You're behind an opposing vehicle. You shoot it with a blasted laser. It does some damage, and you're able to drive right by them. So not only are you doing damage with these weapons, you can accumulate damage just by running into other cars or walls. And what happens is you don't have like a damage meter, but your car will start smoking when you've racked up a lot of damage. And when you've racked up too much, your car will explode and you'll respawn a couple seconds later. So there's that penalty. You know, you're giving yourself a pretty big disadvantage when you're blowing up because you're knocking yourself back in the race. And the AI does a pretty good job of keeping up. There's definitely some rubber banding going on, but
they keep them on your tail if you're too far, if you're too advanced, or they keep them
they sure do
behind if you're really terrible.
Yep. So that's pretty symptomatic of most racers of the time, so it's not really a huge deal, but it's just kind of irritating. Like you're racing really well and you're not putting any distance between you and them. And then when they catch up and you start racing really terribly, they're not getting too far ahead of you. So, there's a bunch of different racers that you can choose to play as. Like, it's supposed to be like a sci-fi kind of setting. Except all of your cars have wheels to them. It's the only thing not sci-fi about this game. But the other, there's different racers from different planets, and they all have their own attributes. Like, they have like a plus one in each particular stat that they can have. So, like, the human guy has plus one in speed and acceleration. There's a bunch of different stats. Your top speed, your acceleration, your handling. There's, like, five or six, and I can't remember all of them offhand. But a bunch of different racers you can race as. There's only three different cars that you can buy, though, as far as I know. I don't know if you maybe you unlock more as
is
you go.
Is it skins, or like they actually have different stats about them?
They have different stats, and they have different price tags as well. There's a couple that you can buy. You start off with 20 grand, and there's two different cars you can buy for about 18 grand, and then there's one that's 70 grand.
Are there stats distributed such that you hedge it with whoever you're racing with? Like, if you have someone that has, like you said, really good acceleration, you would want to equip a car that has better handling to compensate?
I think so, but they don't really spell it out for you in the game. That might be something that was included in the instruction manual, like the different stats of different racers. All they really tell you is when you're selecting a racer is what they're good at. Mm-hmm. They don't really tell you what their detriments are, and they don't really tell you what the particular cars are good at either. When you're buying new parts, it'll tell you what that part is doing to your car, but you won't get like you've upgraded this, now your car has these stats.
So there's
three difficulty levels and eight tracks per difficulty level. You can like swap your difficulty level in the middle of the game whenever you feel like you're ready to upgrade. The thing about this game is there's a really cool amount of customization to it for such an early game in the 16-bit era, but you know, just in the 16-bit era in general. But you can't save. You have to use passwords to do all this. And, you know, if you mess up your password, then you've lost all this progress that you've made, all these races that you've won and money that you've racked up and changes that you've done to your car. It's just all gone.
That's something that was about was it Mega Man X we were playing recently?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you have to have the giant key code combination because you need to remember everything you've collected.
Yeah.
What stages you've beaten. It can get kind of complex trying to figure out exactly every single element that would match if you were to jump back into it.
Right. And it's very strange when Super Nintendo games don't elect to have like just saves, because there were NES games, of course, that had saves. So both Legend of Zelda games had saves. Dragon Warrior, Final Fantasy, it's not like it was new technology. I guess maybe it was just a way to keep costs down, just use a password system rather than like put an internal battery in there.
Maybe also rentals? I mean, it would make more sense for rentals. Like, imagine if you were trying to play an RPG at a rental store or something, you just picked up a game that somebody was already done with or they had just beat, and you want to start a new game, and then what do you have to do? Delete someone that clocked, you know, 15, 20 hours playing a game.
Yeah, maybe. That could
but
be
But again, that's RPGs. That's the worst example of something you should rent.
Right. But the thing is, Nintendo in particular, I don't know how other publishers felt about this, but Nintendo hated rentals. They hated places that you could rent games out. Because
really?
I had no idea.
I didn't know this.
Yeah, they viewed it as cutting into their profits, because it was just like the one store that was getting a copy of a game or a couple copies of a game, and then people just going there and paying them to rent it over and over again, as opposed to them going to a store and having to buy the game. But yeah, Nintendo hated those kind of services. Mm-hmm. But
well, hey, one of them is still around and the other's not, so figured it out.
Yep. So anything else any other games you want to mention real quick before we close it out here?
I don't know if this is the appropriate venue for it, but I did finally just cross the finish line in Pokemon X.
Oh, good.
Did you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, it depends. We can if you want, or you can bring that up on the Pokemon show, which will be in a couple weeks. Up to you.
You know, I'm gonna hang on to that one. You know, I'm gonna put that one in the compression chamber. We'll unleash that one at another point.
You're making some pretty good progress in your Nuzlocke since we're
I'm actually doing really good. I still can't get over the fact that I lost my fucking starter.
That's really brutal.
But I'm making up for it other places, so good. I'm doing all right.
Without going into too much detail here, since we're going to be talking about this in a couple weeks, I am just about to get the 8th gym badge, so I'm just about to close off the section we're going to be talking about. I have one really overleveled Pokemon, and it is, of course, Manectric, since there has been so much fucking surfing going on. And I actually, Kyogre is the legendary in Sapphire version, the version I'm playing. I wasn't able to catch him I crit hit him, killed him.
Ouch.
And I didn't have, because I was thinking of the strategy I would use going into it. It's like, oh, I'm just going to grab the Master Ball and just chuck it at him, and he'll be a legendary that I can rely on if things go terribly awry.
Yeah.
And apparently I missed the Master Ball, and the place I looked up where it is, and the place where it is now closed off. So no Master Ball for me, apparently. Oh, well, that's
right. You need to play it with the thing. Like, that's how I've been playing this the entire time.
With Bulbapedia open?
Yeah. Like, it's just, also it adds fun detail. Like, interesting things to pick out. And make sure you didn't miss anything for starters. That's a big deal. But also, just like, if you really want to min-max your way through a Nuzlocke run, this is a great way to do it.
I have been utilizing Gabby and Ty quite a bit.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, man, you can grind so hard on them.
Yeah, and that's pretty much...
Do you have a flyer anymore? Like, I know you lost...
Yes. Crobat is able to fly.
Well, perfect. You can just jump around over and over again, and every single time they're going to be at level 39.
Yep,
and they're just going to chuck experience at you like it's nothing.
Yep, and money as well. Really good way to build up some cash.
Yeah. Oh yeah, ton of cash reserve. Like, that's already like not even an issue. We're talking too much about.
Yeah,
there is a whole podcast.
You have like 200,000 opposed to 100,000. Anyway, so that's going to close out for this week. Is it though? It really should.
Yeah.
It really should, because we can mention how terrible the Red Sox are if you want. Every time you bring them up, I feel a little bit more positive, because, like, we talked about them, they might start winning again. But the first time you brought them up...
I was actually wanted to talk about the high-res DuckTales that's coming out, but... No, go on about the Red Sox.
DuckTales Remastered already came out?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I have that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that came out last year.
Oh, did it?
I think maybe the disc, the hard copy version. It was digital only.
I'm a little behind.
Yeah, it's all right.
I'm just kidding. I did want to talk about Red Sox baseball.
Okay.
So go on.
No, see, you brought this up a month and a half ago, and when we had that discussion, I was pretty pessimistic about how the team was doing and how I wasn't so sure they were going to turn it around. And then they pulled off like 7 in a row. And I thought, hey, maybe they will be able to turn this around. And it turns out that no, they are not.
That's not happening.
They're not going to be able to turn this around.
So what is wrong with the team right now?
Right now, for the past couple of weeks, there hasn't been any offense. Mm-hmm. Haven't been able to score any runs.
I've noticed there have been a lot of they've been losing a lot of like 2-1, 3-2 games, mm-hmm. things like that.
Which is frustrating, because the starting pitching, aside from last night when John Lackey gave up like 6, and we lost like 12-3.
Well, hey, give them those 12 runs now. That's one win. One win gets them 12 runs. I'm sure they'd rather have that distributed across other games.
So, aside from last night's start, the starting pitching has been very good, and just haven't been able to generate the run support behind them.
Yeah.
So.
Lots of walks, apparently.
Yeah.
Can't do anything with it.
Yep. Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, it's not looking good.
Yeah.
It's running out of time here. You know, you can kind of plot along in April and May, but once you start getting toward the end of June, you kind of have to be rounding into form. Mm-hmm. And yeah,
you don't think they're gonna do it? Well, never say never, but yeah. At their current state,
if they do, it might be a little too little, too late. I mean, the AL East isn't, like, no one's running away with the division. Like, Toronto has kind of collapsed in on themselves recently. So no one is really super ahead. I think, like, despite the Red Sox suckitude, they're still only, like, 7 games out. But they have to leapfrog 4 other teams to get to win the division. And you're going to have to win the division to get to the playoffs in this division, I don't think.
So wait, they're the worst in the division? No, who's beneath them?
Tampa.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, how about that? I mean, at least they suck.
Yeah.
I don't know, if the Red Sox can't get it, maybe the Orioles will, or Toronto will get it together, because as long as Tampa and the Yankees are not able to get into the playoffs, that's kind of a win.
How long has it been since the Orioles took the division?
A long time.
Like anybody other than those three, other than Boston, Yankees.
It's been a long time.
Marlins are in there too, right? Marlins and Toronto?
No, Marlins are in the National League.
Oh, okay.
In the East. So yeah, it's Tampa, New York, Boston, Toronto, Baltimore. Hmm. Anyway, so I think that'll close us out for this week. Actually, in a couple of days, I'm hoping to get Wes by here, and Ryan, you're always welcome as well. I'll keep you posted on when it's going to happen, but get Wes in for an official show, and then beginning of next month, we'll start it all up again with the Pokemon show.
Awesome.
Till next time, everybody.
Later.